Bismillah, wassalatu wassalamu ala rasulillah. Allahumma salli ala sayyidina Muhammad wa ala ali sayyidina Muhammad kama sallaita ala Ibrahim wa ala ali Ibrahim innaka hamidun majid. Allahumma barik ala Muhammad wa ala ali Muhammad kama barakta ala Ibrahim wa ala ali Ibrahim innaka hamidun majid. Allahumma alhimna marashida umurina وأعذنا من شرور أنفسنا. So our discussion is regarding the Hajj of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam, which was known as a wada or a wida, a farewell to the entire ummah. In this he had said to the people, خذوا عني, that take well from me your rites of Hajj. He did not only say it to the group around him, but he meant for now the entire world, that whoever will come, my last amal that I left for the ummah. And normally it is a man, Hajj is like the fifth amal that comes in his life. As we mentioned, you don't wait to become pious to go for Hajj, but naturally when a man knows I'm going for Hajj, he already starts performing salah. He makes sure his zakah is given. If Ramadan comes before that, you're not going to find the man not fasting and say, I'll go for Hajj. So he'll normally do what has to be done. And now Hajj is now completing that entire tent of his. Allah's Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, for him it was the last amal he was giving the ummah. For the ummah, it's like the last amal that's coming into the tent of Islam. So there were many actions on this journey which might have seemed very trivial. It never make any difference whether it's on this date or that date. Sahaba radiallahu anhu, however, recorded it. And the ummah will always be able to take enjoyment whenever they'll be able to get one of these sunans, although it is not within their power. For example, when Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam now comes to Dhul Hulayfa, he leaves Makkah Mukarrama on the 25th of Dhul Qa'dah, which we mentioned previously. That was a Saturday. Then he will read his Asr, Maghrib, Isha, Fajr and Zuhr at Dhul Hulayfa. So now it is the 26th of Dhul Qa'dah. It's a Sunday. 26th of Dhul Qa'dah is Sunday. Tomorrow like Sunday. On the 26th of Dhul Qa'dah, Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam will leave. He'll read Zuhr Salah in Dhul Hulayfa, and thereafter he will leave, and he will reach Makkah Mukarrama on the following week. So he leaves on a Sunday, and he will reach the following week on a Sunday. He leaves on a Sunday, it's the 26th of Dhul Qa'dah, the month is 29 days. So the following week, which is the 4th of Dhul Hijjah, he will reach, it's also a Sunday. Now to be able to get two Sundays like how it was in the past might be very difficult, because our journey doesn't take so long. But imagine a person leaves on a Sunday, like example, whoever will leave tomorrow, he will leave on a Sunday. So he will say, at least that sunnah I fulfilled. And he will reach on a Sunday, although it's the same Sunday. But at least he can say, I reached a Sunday, I left on a Sunday. As he did it, only my week is different. But that's a person who will try as close as possible. Abdullah bin Umar radiallahu anhu used to do this. On the journey of Hajj, if Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam stopped at a place, some might say he just stopped here to rest. On the journey you have to rest somewhere. So this came along the path. Some would say he stopped here for the purpose of istinja. Abdullah bin Umar radiallahu anhu, he wouldn't worry of that. He would stop there. He says, he stopped, I will stop. Even if he had no need for istinja at that moment, he would stop, he would take his rest. They had this, that there was something in the every action of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, that they found it very hard to say it just happened. They found it very hard to say it just happened. For them that, which is known as a lover, every action of his beloved becomes beloved. Every action of the beloved becomes beloved. So they searched. That is why dates they gave, times they gave, places they gave. When the time came now to don the ihram, and that's what's going to happen when everyone now leaves Makkah, Medina, Munawwara. So Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam's ihram is going to be donned from Zul Hulayfa. Zul Hulayfa was on the path to Makkah Mukarramah in the past. No longer it's on that path. So now you'll go to Zul Hulayfa and you might come, have to come back again. Because of which, it is known that if a person dons his ihram from Medina Munawwara and he continues to Makkah Mukarramah, he can avoid going to Zul Hulayfa. Because now that's off the path. It's no longer on the road to Makkah Mukarramah. There would be two groups. One group would say that the purpose of going to Zul Hulayfa was to make it easy. It was on the road. You would stop. Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam waited one day so everyone could gather and from there you carry on. He was not going to go to Zul Hulayfa and after that come back to Medina and then carry on. That would make it difficult. Because of which, in the past, especially when transport was an issue, and today also where transport can be an issue, if it's a busy time, you might find by going to Zul Hulayfa and then going further, you might get caught in traffic. You might find, no, it might be easier. Let's go to Zul Hulayfa because we're already then out of the center of Medina Munawwara. So from there, although it's a little bit out, we'll be able to get onto the highway much easier. Whatever is easy, that's the basis. But when the issue in the past was discussed, the ulama would search like what is best. So some would say best is Medina Munawwara, no? The masjid of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam, you tie your ihram, you read two rakats, and you carry on to Makkah Mukarramah. Others would say that go to Zul Hulayfa. That is how ulama always looked at it. Imam Malik rahimullah, someone said to him, because Imam Malik rahimullah's view was that Zul Hulayfa you must still go to. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, I was ordered, meaning Jibreel alayhi salatu wa salam came to him in his dream, and he said, Salli fi hadha al-wadil al-mubarak, that in this blessed valley perform your salah. That time there was no masjid of Zul Hulayfa, the masjid was going to be built after. It was the valley, it's known as the valley of Aqiq. It was the valley and he was told, perform your salah. He said, because it's known as a blessed valley. So Imam Malik rahimullah would tell the people, go. Again, the matter was based on whatever you like. But a person said to Imam Malik in a manner that perhaps he was not happy with. He said that, what's the issue? I will rather tie my ihram in Medina Munawwara. And then I'll get more footsteps in the state of ihram until other people will read Zul Hulayfa after. I will have a few more footsteps with ihram and then I'll read Zul Hulayfa and I'll carry on. So what's the issue? Imam Malik rahimullah, he was a unique person. And he also had that extreme, like my Nabi went to Zul Hulayfa, there must have been something there. It's not just on the road. Although the ulama differ in the Hanafi madhab, it will be that for ease, Zul Hulayfa would have been best in the past. Because you go right till the final, and thereafter you carry on. And in today's time, when it doesn't come on the road at all, whatever is easy. If the traffic will be easier from Zul Hulayfa, then go to Zul Hulayfa, you can read your salah, and you can carry on, you get out of the traffic. Because there were times where people in Medina Munawwara, and they decided to leave for the station, and thinking the station is just around the corner, but with traffic, nothing comes around the corner. And by the time you reach the station, everything closed. But if you're out of the traffic area, so whatever is easier. Imam Malik rahimullah said to the person, I don't worry about you getting extra sawab on every footstep. I'm worried about fitna. You'll be thrown into a major trial. So the man said that, what trial? I'm only going to get sawab. How can there be a fitna in sawab? Imam Malik rahimullah said, the fitna is in this. That when you will leave with everyone else, you will be in ihram and everyone else is still going to tie the ihram. Then you look around you and you will look at everyone and feel, that I am getting more sawab on every footstep than the people who are following the sunnah of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Imam Malik said, that can't happen. He said, that's what I'm scared about. That's fitna. As you look at that one and said, I'm getting more sawab, but that one is doing what the Nabi did. He said, the thought of you, that it seems that the Nabi of Allah, his amal gives less sawab than your amal. He said, that thought is what I'm scared about. Will that thought come in your mind? So a person can tie his ihram from home. A person can tie it from South Africa. A person can tie it 2 days before the day to leave. The longer you're in ihram, the more the sawab you can get, definitely. But if ever a person feels that then his ihram has become superior to the ihram of the other, who went to the final point where Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam reached, and then tied it, and that person, he is looking at some fitna. And that thought is not allowed. Allah's Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam's every action was on the highest level of kamal perfection. So when the time comes for donning the ihram, Allah's Rasul sallallahu alaihi wasallam will prepare his body. But we will normally say, you take your ghusl. It was a separate ghusl that he took, which inshallah tomorrow, if people are getting ready, ulama have put a lot of taqid on this ghusl, when we call mu'akkad. This is a very important ghusl. Even if a person makes wuzu, it will still be sufficient. But a lot of taqid emphasis was put, to such an extent that scholars of other madahib would go to the extent of calling it wajib also. A wajib ghusl. Obviously, we will explain that in the past, the journey was going to be long, a 1 week journey, you want to be clean. Today, it's a 1 day journey, couple of hours. The body will not start smelling so much. We will give many reasons to say that it is not compulsory. But because Allah's Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam, he had already taken a ghusl that day. In the night, he had spent time with his wives. He had taken his ghusl, a ghusl after spending time with your family. He had taken his ghusl on that day. That ghusl was taken before the Fajr Salah. But when the time of Zuhr came, he took another ghusl for the ihram. You must remember, in their time and our time, ghusl was not easy in their time. Like how it's easy in our time. You need to get your water. You need to find your place. How we just can walk into our own bathroom of the room, and in 1 minute come out, it makes no difference between a wuzu and a ghusl. For them, it was not so easy. The fact that he took a separate ghusl for his ihram showed the importance of honoring the ihram. So the ghusl was taken, oil was put on the hair, on the body. With regards to the oil, Aisha radiallahu anha says, I was the one, طَيَّبْتُ بِيَدَيَّ, with my very hands I put on the طِيب. She will speak about putting on the طِيب, and she will also speak about putting on what is known as قَصَبُ الذَّرِيرَ, in oil. So she says, with my very hands I rubbed on the body of Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam, and on the head. With regards to which parts of the body she rubbed, it's not clear. It would perhaps be the leg, maybe the heel, it's an oil. And then tayyib, a scent. This was not regarding the ihram, the cloth. This was on the body. Because of which the Sahabi radiallahu anhu says, وَلَمْ يَغْسِلْهُ بَعْدَ. After this, Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam did not wash it off, because the ghusl was already finished. So oil is something that if it's in your body, then as they went on the journey, the heat sometimes causes perspiration. Perspiration and oil, when it touches, you will get a certain, like a glitter, a shine. The Sahabi says, I would see the shine on the area where the hair of Nabi sallallahu alaihi wasallam would part. He said, I would see sometimes a little bit by his beard. Because it was not now, a ghusl wasn't taken to wipe it out. It was rubbed into the body. With regards to qasabu zarira, this is something that a person can make effort in this direction. Any oil can be used. But the oil that was used in their era, in English today we will call it acarus calamus oil. Acarus calamus. And a lot of investigation presently is taking place regarding this oil. They speak about in the past, it was regarded by all cultures, the Egyptians, the Indians. They all regarded this oil as a very, very strong medication. It's a root, so it could be taken as a root, but they used to make an oil. It was found to be very good for inflammation of the body. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam's wife, most likely Ummu Salama radiallahu anha, she has what we will call like a pimple. So she says the pimple comes out on the finger. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam sees it. Ibn al-Qayyim explains that this pimple is what is called, it's a certain heat. It's created by a certain heat in the body which the body doesn't want. Because of which the body pushes it to the surface. That's what we normally call our pimples. He says, Qasabu al-Zarira had within it that ability to remove the heat, to break the heat. So I don't know if that pimple was like the pimples that come out on the head and the face, but the basis is the same, heat. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam asked her, do you not have by you Qasabu al-Zarira? And she brought it, Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam said, apply it. He even made dua. He said, do you have by you Zarira? She said, yes. He said, place this on it and say, Allahumma musaghir al-kabir wa mukabbir al-saghir saghir ma bi. Oh Allah, that which is big, you are the one who makes it small. Musaghir al-kabir. And that which is small, you are the one that makes it big. So because both are in your command, صغر ما بي, what I have, O Allah, make it small. So she placed it, and Allah Tabarakallah gave her shifa. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wa sallam on an occasion, on his foot he had. So he asked, can you bring Zarira for me? Again he makes the same dua and he adds, O Allah, remove the heat of this. And he places it, and the right and the heat of it, they use the word as though it was extinguished. Meaning it lost its heat and it disappears. It is known as a very unique oil. Some people put it in tea and they drink it, very good for memory, improving memory. And in today's time they are making a lot of investigation regarding what we call issues to do with the arteries, internal organs, because of extreme heat within. So that's Qasabu al-Zarira. One scholar wrote something nice. He said how in the houses today, a lot of us do have a lot of tibbi, the medication of Rasulullah sallallahu alayhi wa sallam. He said that this oil, acarus calamus oil, should also be part of the closet. And a person should start with applying it. So during the Hajj journey, you apply it normally. They do mention very good for cracks. Now me and you won't see so many cracks because we're not making a very long journey. But still when you will reach the haram and you will start making your tawaf and your sa'i, as you come closer to the day of Hajj, you will find cracks coming on your feet. There's a lot of walking. Our shoes are comfortable, but there are times where you're going to be walking barefoot. So it's very good for cracks. It's very good for joint pain. That's the second thing all will experience. You will walk so much in the next few days that you will start searching for some machine to do a massage for you. So for joint pain, this was regarded as very, very good. That one who got himmat, courage, he can remember the whole narration that Aisha radiallahu anha says, with my hand I applied it. So if he got courage, he can even say to his wife that the real sunnah in this one is, I get the oil, but you have to apply it. But you have to have courage for that one, because in case the wife says that the day you come, you become like the Rasul of Allah, then I'll become like Aisha. And as long as you, I'll be me. There was a man in the past, he wasn't happy with his daughter-in-law. So he, normally a person gets a lot of shock to get his child married. But when the girl comes into the family, naturally she's going to borrow your son. It's natural. Not borrow, she's going to steal. She's the wife now. She's not going to say how you were before with your parents. You carry on like that day. If you got any free time, please give it to me. She left her whole family. So she expects, when I left my whole family, you also now leave your whole family. It's only the parents, it seems when they get old, they forget that once upon a time they did the same thing. Because this girl's mother also stole the father. It just seems that as they get older, they don't remember that. So they get the child married, they give so much of wealth to the girl. But they're not ready to give the girl time. That's all they need. Example, your son gets married. That night, you don't have to get angry why he never phoned you and speak half an hour. He's spoken to you a whole life. Now for the next 3 days, if he doesn't phone, the mother can't say, why he's not phoning? Why he's not phoning? He doesn't like me anymore. So the father-in-law got very upset and he told the son, I want you to divorce her. So the son said that there's nothing wrong with her. Like, what did she do? He said, I just don't like her. Just divorce her. And there are many up till today who always say that. So when the boy refused, then he asked one scholar, and the scholar said, did she do something wrong? How can you just divorce her? You can't send a girl home like that. So he goes to explain to his father. So the father says that Umar radiallahu anh was not happy with the daughter, the in-law, with the wife of Abdullah bin Umar. So Umar radiallahu anh told Abdullah bin Umar radiallahu anh, I'm not happy with your wife. Ibrahim alayhi salam told Ismail alayhi salam, I'm not happy with your wife. Umar radiallahu anh told Abdullah bin Umar. Abdullah bin Umar never do anything. He loved his father, but now it's very hard. So Umar radiallahu anh mentioned in front of Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam that I'm not happy with his wife. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam called Abdullah bin Umar and said, obey your father. And now when it comes as a command, immediately he went and he said, this is a command from above, I am letting you go. So this father-in-law now says to his son, that you want me to also go complain to Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam, divorce your wife. So now the boy was in a real spot, because now it's like the sunnah. So he goes to the scholar to ask, now what? So the scholar says, the day your father becomes like Umar, you come back and ask him again. That as long as he is him, leave him. Umar radiallahu anhu was blessed with certain inspiration, which Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam said, if there had to be a Nabi after me, it would have been him. He saw in that woman something which was on the basis of divine inspiration. Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam would say, listen to your father, he's seeing something you're not. Ibrahim alayhi salam saw in the wife of Ismail alayhi salam something, that this woman will not be the one who can be the carrier of the light of Nubuwa. He saw something. It was understood as divine inspiration. Every father-in-law doesn't see something. So from here we learn also that if you can become like the Rasul of Allah, then you can also get a massage from your wife also. So Aisha radiallahu anha, she put on the oil. She put on the oil, she put on the tib. Ulama have mentioned, as I mentioned to you, the oil remains in the body. So even if later on you see the glitter of it, it's no problem. As for oil and ithar on your ihram cloth, if you're going to put oil and it's going to leave a stain, they have mentioned you rather wash off that stain. On the body, it becomes part of you, there's no problem. If it's on the cloth, put on an ether that gives a smell and you can enter into ihram. But if you're seeing the ether, then you rather put it under water and at least wipe away the main, what is called the body of it. Because we do not want to have that body, otherwise when you're in ihram, you will definitely touch also. And then ether from there will come back onto your body. So if it is on the body, Imam Muhammad rahimullah did not like it. Imam Abu Hanifa rahimullah, on the basis of the hadith that we used to see it, they allowed on the body. But when it came onto the ihram cloth, there the law is, if you can see the ether, you can see the oil, wipe it, wash it off. Because it's only an issue of water, a little rub and it's gone. Allah's Rasul sallallahu alayhi wasallam, after applying the oil, he now dons the ihram. 2 rakats will be read. Allah's Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam is already at Dhul Hulayfa. We will normally go to Dhul Hulayfa. is already at Dhul Hulayfa. It is the time of Zuhr Salah. That era Dhul Hulayfa was out of Medina Munawwara. So even Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam will be in Musafir at Dhul Hulayfa. In that era. In today's era, it's part of Medina Munawwara. But me and you, as soon as we leave, we are Musafir here. So we will remain Musafir at Dhul Hulayfa. If we had to be Muqim here, staying so many days in Medina Munawwara, then in Dhul Hulayfa we'll also be Muqim. The journey will start only when we leave Medina Munawwara, not in Medina. But in that era, Dhul Hulayfa was out. So Zuhr Salah was going to be 2 rakats. If we ever reach there when it's Zuhr Salah, we're going to read behind the Imam. So naturally, you're going to read 4 rakats. You will not be able to read 2 if you're reading behind the Imam. They discuss now that the 2 rakats that Allah's Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam read, was it a 2 rakats of Zuhr Salah? Or was it a 2 rakats for Ihram? So the better view is Allah's Nabi Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam's 2 rakats was the Zuhr Salah. He was a Musafir. He read 2 rakats. After the 2 rakats, which was the Zuhr Salah, there's no report that he stood up again for another 2 rakats. So the scholars explain it in this manner, that when you reach Dhul Hulayfa, and it is the time of a Fard Salah, then the Fard Salah can be your 2 rakats, or 4 rakats, whatever it is. And if it is not the time of the Fard Salah, then you can read a 2 rakats nafal, and thereafter enter into ihram. When you will reach, most likely, they will ask you to leave before the Zuhr Salah. So when you will reach, you will have about 45 minutes. There will not be time for Zuhr Salah, it hasn't yet set in. They will tell you quickly to read 2 rakats, that will be your nafal before the time of Zawal Istiwa comes. And thereafter you will leave it. So if a man reaches Dhul Hulayfa and it is not the time of a Fard Salah, and he will read 2 rakats, and he will say, my Nabi read 2 rakats. Because he was a Musafir. So in that manner, he can practice on the Sunnah. My Nabi read 2 rakats. And if a person reaches there and it's a Fard Salah time, then he can say, my Nabi read it after the Fard Salah. Although he won't be reading now 2 rakats, he'll be reading 4 rakats. But he can also say that it was my Nabi's Fard, after which he did it, I am also doing it after a Fard. In this manner, scholars would always try to see how close I can get to the sunnah of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam. And because it was so easy, he made it. Everyone somehow or the other can fit into some sunnah. So 2 rakats will be read nafal, or you will be reading with the imam, whether it's 4 rakats, whether it's 3 rakats, depending on what time you come. And from here, going through the valley of Atiq, Allah's Rasul sallallahu alayhi wa sallam will make his, what we will call, ihlal or talbiyah. And on this part, we will now end, and we will continue then inshallah when we reach Makkah Mukarrama. Ahalla is called ihlal. Ahalla yuhillu. You also get hallala yuhallilu to read the kalima la ilaha illallah. In the Arabic language, you have normally a name that's given to a body. Example, the first moon, the beginning moon is called Hilal. So that was Hilal. And now because of Hilal, many other words come out now, verbs come out from this Hilal. Because it was famous that when someone would see the first moon, especially amongst the Arabs, because that was their month. So when they would see this first moon, you would normally scream out. So screaming out became known as ahalla, from the word hilal. Screaming out. Hallala, to read loudly, la ilaha illallah. Because the Arabs, whenever something amazing would happen, they would say, la ilaha illallah. So now they're seeing the hilal, so you say, la ilaha illallah. So hallala. And then from ahalla, a child is born, the first scream of the child, they would say, ahalla sabiyo. The child scream out. Why this is being mentioned is to understand that in ihlal, ihlal is another name for raf'u sawti bitalbiyah, to lift the voice with the takbir, with the talbiyah, labbaik Allahumma labbaik. The Swat Ahalla came from a loud voice. This has to be said loudly, because many of the Arabs say that South Africans, it seems they're always very tired. That other people you will see when the labbaik is said, then the whole bus shakes. And the South Africans, when the labbaik is said, the driver thinks that is anyone hearing me? And is there anything happening? So the men must not be shy in this. When you will reach Makkah Mukarramah, others will make you more shy. They will make the haram shake in their labbaik. Me and you don't have to make the bus shake. But it must be loud. Who are you speaking to? You are speaking to yourself. But you are saying it loudly because you're responding. When you respond loudly, not softly. As for a woman, she can't lift her voice for the issue of hijab. So she will be loud with her feelings. Because ihlal means to be loud. You're responding. To understand what do I mean by responding, you have to know the meaning of labbaik. In the Arabic language, if someone calls you, and you say, I'm here, I responded to your call, you say, ajabtu. If a person continuously calls you, you will say, whenever you call, I'm here. Now you say, ajabtu, ba'da ijaba, ba'da ijaba. A shorter word for that day came in the meaning of labbaik. Labbaik means I'm presenting myself to your every call. I'm presenting myself to your every call, how you wanted me to come. Which call? Scholars say it was the call where Allah Ta'ala said to Ibrahim alayhi salam, wa azin. And make the i'lan amongst the people, bil hajj, ya'tuka rijal, wa ala kulli dhamir. You will see people coming on foot. You will see people coming on conveyances. They will be coming min kulli fajjin amik, from very, very far away areas, deep areas, from amongst those people, where Allah Ta'ala said, you will see them coming, me and you also amongst that group. So responding to the call of Almighty Allah. But it is not just a response. One person wrote it so beautifully, may Allah Ta'ala make that when we say this labbaik now, continuously you think of this meaning. He added a little extra in the labbaik. One is the loud voice, and one is the meaning. فَمَا مَعْنَى labbaik? What are you saying when you say labbaik? Number one, he says, you're saying, O Allah, إِنَّنِي مُقِيمٌ عَلَى طَاعَتِكَ. That I am going to be firm on your obedience. Meaning I'll respond whenever you call. Because now you're not saying I responded one. I continuously respond is called labbaik. I will continuously respond to your call. Wherever you will command, you will find me ready. He says, إِنَّنِي تَرَكْتُ كُلَّ الدُّنْيَا. Look at me today. I have left the entire world. The adornments, the beauties, the luxuries of this world. وَاسْتَجَبْتُ لِدَعْوَتِكَ. You call, I said, leave everything, I'm coming. This is what a real slave is. Real slave. When there's a fire in the house, that man grabs whatever he can grab and he runs to save his children. And they say, you left your smartphone. He said, you left your watch. He said, everything else in this world is trivial. You are important. When the man says, labbaik, and he looks at the clothing, he's to say, I left my business. I left my family. I left things which I never thought in my life I will leave. Because you called. You must have this. But I never only do it once. Labbaik. I continuously, O Allah, will now respond to your every call. That whatever is important in front of me, as soon as your command comes, I'll leave it all. Even if I have to run out of the house with only a towel, I'll be ready to do it. That's what you are going to repeat loudly, either with the heart loudly or with the tongue. Saying to yourself, it's not a once-off call and acceptance. I'm using the word labbaik. Continuously, O Allah, I am responding to your call. It is not only one call to the house of Allah. It is a call to Allah Himself. That call comes in Makkah Mukarramah, that call will come wherever you are in the world. Labbaik, I will leave everything when your call commands. Even if it means I'll have to leave my entire world. And put on just to cover my basic sitter and come out in front of you. Oh Allah, labbaik. Not only will I do it, sa'adaik. I'll take great honor in doing this. Sa'adaik means I will take honor. It will be my honor to be dirty for you. It will be my honor to have a smell on my body. I can't put itar, but it's for you. It will be an honor for me to be disheveled, to be tired, to be pushing the limits. When man will say this, suddenly what we will call submitting to Allah in difficulty becomes easy. Because you will say it so many times, sa'adik, labbaik, sa'adik, labbaik, I'm ready, sa'adik, it's my honor. So labbaik, labbaik, Allahumma labbaik. That, oh Allah, I'm here, I'm ready and I'll always be ready. Then he says, la sharika laka labbaik. But what made me leave everything? Because, oh Allah, there's no partner with you. So that house of mine can't be your partner. So when the call comes, and you got no partner, so you are more important than the house. So naturally I must leave my house. The house can't be a partner with you. My phone can't be a partner. My car can't be. My business can't be. Even my family is not a partner with you. There is no partner. When we will say, La sharika lak, many a person will think that, oh Allah, there's no other idol I worship. But we do have idols. This La sharika lak, in line with you, oh Allah, nothing. Because of which, when it calls and you calls, I'll respond to you even if it cries. This was what Nabi sallallahu alayhi wasallam said. You will have to give preference between your dunya or your akhirah. He said, give preference to that which will remain forever over that which is going to come to an end. La sharika lak. Innal hamda wal ni'mata wal mulk. Innal hamda wal ni'mata laka wal mulk. Oh Allah, when I have to praise, no longer I'll praise my business. No longer I'll praise my car. No longer I'll praise something I have done. Praise is only for you. So naturally I have to leave everything else. Number two, ni'mah, gifts. The world never gave me anything. When gifts came, when ni'mah talak, gifts have only come from you. So when you call, naturally I must respond. Well, mulk and kingdom is yours. The world cannot give unless you allow it. So why look at the world, which is the slave? I'll rather look at the one who gives the world. This labbaik will continue so many times until you see the Kaaba. Every time it is a message to yourself that it is not just a response to the Hajj. Because I told you this is the completion of your tent of Islam. When the Hajj completes, the man has to be like Ibrahim alayhi salam. I have reached the level of total submission to the command of my Allah. This labbaik will help us to get that. May Allah tabarakallah in the blessings of this most unique zikr allow the meaning of the zikr to enter within the hearts of every one of us. May Allah tabarakallah allow every one of us to become one who truly submits to his every command. Wa sallallahu ala nabiyyi al-kareem wa ala alihi wa ashabihi ajma'in walhamdulillahi rabbil alamin.